You're number three in the sequence. You've got a heavy jet, two ahead of you, and a regional jet directly in front. The controller gives you a distance call. Traffic, 3 miles in trail, a Boeing 757. You're in a Cessna 210. The controller reads the wake turbulence caution. You read it back. You've heard it 100 times, and then the left wing drops like the ground moved. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS on Radio Hangar. Today, I want to walk through something that is directly relevant to every pilot flying into a controlled airport, especially a busy hub. The Federal Aviation Administration's recategorization program, known as RECAT US, changed the separation standards between aircraft at major facilities. Understanding what it changed and what it didn't change is not optional for anyone sharing the terminal environment with jets. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's start with the physics. Because the physics don't care about the regulations. When an aircraft generates lift, it accelerates air over the top of the wing, creating a low-pressure zone. The higher-pressure air underneath moves toward that low-pressure zone at the wingtip. Where the two surfaces meet, the air rolls off in a tight counter-rotating column. Two wingtips, two vortices spinning toward each other inboard and sinking. The heavier the aircraft and the slower the airspeed, the stronger those vortices are. A loaded Airbus 380 on approach is generating two horizontal funnels of disturbed air extending hundreds of feet behind and below it. Each vortex is spinning at velocities that can exceed the roll control authority of a smaller following aircraft. Those vortices don't stop when the aircraft touches down. In calm or light wind conditions, they can persist for 2 to 4 minutes. They descend at roughly 300 to 500 feet per minute, and they drift laterally with any crosswind component. Here's where pilots get surprised. In a light crosswind, 5 knots or less, the downwind vortex drifts away from the centerline, but the upwind vortex can stall sitting near or over the runway environment. The pilot following the heavy expects the vortex to drift clear. It hasn't. The meteorology didn't cooperate. The danger zone is the last 3,000 feet of final and the initial climb out after rotation. That's where the vortex concentration is highest, where the following aircraft is lowest, where altitude margin for recovery is the smallest. The original wake turbulence separation standards the FAA built were workable but blunt. Three categories: small, large, and heavy. Small was any aircraft under 12,500 pounds maximum certificated takeoff weight. Large was 12,500 pounds up to 300,000 pounds. Heavy was anything above 300,000 pounds. A super category was added later specifically for the Airbus 380. The separation minimums were based on the following aircraft category relative to the lead aircraft category. A small aircraft behind a heavy got 6 miles. A large behind a heavy got 5. A heavy behind a heavy got 4. The flaw became increasingly clear as the jet fleet diversified. The Boeing 737, which comes in variants ranging from 80,000 pounds to over 180,000 pounds, was in the same large category as a Piper Cheyenne turboprop. The Boeing 757, which produces some of the most powerful wake turbulence of any narrowbody jet because of its relatively small wingspan relative to its weight, got the same following aircraft spacing as a Cessna Citation that weighs a fraction as much. The system was using a very wide brush. The Europeans recognized this first and implemented a new classification called RECAT Europe, assigning aircraft to categories based on actual wake hazard characteristics, wingspan, weight, and approach speed together. The FAA adapted that concept for the National Airspace System as RECAT US. RECAT US assigns aircraft to one of 6 categories. Labeled A through F, category A is the largest widebodies. The Airbus 380 sits here. Very few aircraft qualify. If you've seen one on final ahead of you at LAX or JFK, you've seen category A. Category B is heavy long-range widebodies. The Boeing 747 in its variants, the Airbus 340, the Boeing 767, the Airbus 330, the aircraft that dominate international routes. Category C includes medium-heavy narrowbodies. The Boeing 757 sits in Category C. This placement is significant. The 757's wake is disproportionately powerful relative to its apparent size. At major hub airports, 757 departures and arrivals get more protective spacing around them under RKEA-CAT than under the old system. That's not an accident. Category D is medium narrowbody jets, most Airbus 320 family aircraft, most Boeing 737 variants, the aircraft you'll encounter most frequently in any busy terminal environment. Category E covers small jets and large turboprops. Regional jets like the Embraer 175 and the Bombardier CRJ series, some business jets, the larger cabin turboprops. Category F is small aircraft, general aviation singles and twins. Light sport. If you're flying a Cessna 172, a Piper Aero, a Cirrus SR-22, or a Beechcraft Bonanza into a RECAT airport, you're category F. The separation minimums under RECAT are specified as pairings. Category F, following category B, under some configurations, actually gets more separation than the old standard required. Category D, following category D, may get reduced separation relative to the old system, because the research showed the actual hazard did not require the previous buffer between similarly sized jets. For the operations manager at a major hub, RECAT is an efficiency tool. It moves more aircraft per hour through constrained airspace by calibrating separation to actual hazard rather than the broadest possible category. For the Category F pilot behind a Category B heavy, the question is, what is the actual minimum being applied, and is the atmosphere cooperating with the standard? The FAA has been deploying RECAT US at major hub airports over the past several years. Atlanta, Los Angeles, Dallas-Fort Worth, Chicago O'Hare, Denver, and a growing list of others have transitioned. When RECAT is active at a facility, controllers apply RECAT separation minima, not the traditional 3, 4, 5, and 6-mile standards you may have memorized. In instrument meteorological conditions on an instrument landing system approach, you have essentially no independent means of assessing whether the vortex from the preceding aircraft has cleared your flight path. You are trusting the system. The system is calibrated for standard atmospheric conditions. If the atmosphere is behaving differently, the system doesn't know. Temperature inversions can trap vortices and prevent normal descent rates. Very light winds reduce lateral drift and keep the vortex near the centerline longer than the standard assumes. In certain humidity conditions, vortex persistence is measurably extended. None of that is communicated in your clearance. The controller is not getting a real-time wake turbulence assessment. The separation is based on established minimums and aircraft categories. In visual meteorological conditions, the dynamic shifts entirely. When a controller clears you for a visual approach or issues a clearance to maintain visual separation with traffic, the responsibility for spacing is yours. The wake turbulence advisory the controller reads is a caution. It is not a guarantee. The advisory is the beginning of a decision process, not the end of it. Pilots on visual approaches sometimes make a shortcut in their thinking. ATC issued the caution. I heard it. I read it back. I'm covered. That is not how this works. The question after the caution is, where is that vortex right now, and does my flight path intersect it? If you're flying a visual approach behind a heavy on a 3 or 4 mile final, you need to be tracking the lead aircraft's glide path relative to yours. The vortex sinks. If you're above the heavy's glide path, you're above the primary vortex concentration. If you're on the same glide path, you're likely in the vortex zone. If you're below the heavy's glide path, you're flying into the area where the vortex has already descended. That last scenario is where the wing drop comes from. The accidents that shaped our understanding of wake turbulence hazard are worth knowing in some detail. The most studied in the regulatory and training community is a crash at JFK in November 2001. A wide-body jet departed behind a much heavier aircraft that had gotten airborne about 2 minutes earlier. The following aircraft encountered wake turbulence at approximately 500 feet above the ground in the initial climb. The pilots made aggressive rudder inputs in response to the rolling motion. Each subsequent input amplified the oscillation rather than damping it. The vertical stabilizer separated from the aircraft. 260 people died. The National Transportation Safety Board found the primary cause was inappropriate use of the rudder, which generated loads exceeding the design limits of the vertical stabilizer. But wake turbulence was the initiating event. The lesson buried inside the accident report is one every pilot should carry. In a wake turbulence encounter, aggressive control inputs can create structural loads that exceed airframe limits. The instinct to fight a sudden bank with opposite aileron and full rudder may be the exactly wrong response. Measured control, coordinated wings level, if possible, is the recovery objective. In general aviation, the incidents are quieter. A Piper Cherokee behind a Boeing 737 on a calm afternoon visual approach. A Cirrus following a regional jet on short final. The aircraft aren't equipped with the recorders that survive the sequence of events. The NTSB determines loss of control on approach or landing, and wake turbulence is listed as a contributing factor. The pattern repeats with depressing regularity. So here's what you can actually do. Concretely, know your category at RECAT airports. If you're flying a light aircraft into a RECAT facility and you're behind a Category B or C aircraft, the minimum separation you're receiving is based on your Category F status and the lead aircraft's category. Understanding that pairing tells you what the controller is working with. It gives you context for whether to ask for more. Ask for additional spacing when you're not comfortable. The phrase is simple, request. Additional spacing for wake turbulence controllers can almost always accommodate this. A sentence on the radio is a much better outcome than what comes next if they can't. They would rather give you an extra mile than write the incident report. In visual meteorological conditions on final, aim to be above the preceding aircraft's glide path. Even a slight vertical offset puts you above the primary vortex concentration. If the preceding aircraft has already landed and is clearing, consider asking ATC whether you can land beyond the touchdown point. Not always possible given traffic, but sometimes the option is there and pilots simply don't think to ask. Respect the calm wind scenario. No wind means no lateral drift. The vortex sits where it descended, near the centerline, near the threshold, which is exactly where a normal approach brings you. Brief the escape on departure. If you're departing behind a heavy that just rotated, plan to rotate at or before the heavy's rotation point, and climb on a trajectory that takes you above and away from its departure path. The vortex begins at rotation. It starts sinking from the moment the aircraft leaves the ground. Your job on departure is to be above it, not behind it. One final piece of this that doesn't get enough attention. The RECAT US program and wake turbulence separation in general was designed around normal operating conditions. The separation standards account for typical meteorological conditions and typical aircraft behavior. Atmospheric conditions can push the hazard outside what the standard accounts for. The controller doesn't receive a real-time assessment of what the atmosphere is doing to the vortex behind that heavy jet. The minimum separation applied is calculated on established categories and standard assumptions. That is why every FAA guidance document on this subject emphasizes that wake turbulence avoidance is ultimately a pilot responsibility. The system does its job. The controller does their job. The physics do their job. Whether you ask for extra spacing, fly above the preceding aircraft's glide slope in visual conditions, brief your recovery technique before you need it, and know when to push back, instead of accepting a clearance you're not comfortable with, that is on you. The headline doesn't tell the whole story here. RECAT US sounds like an efficiency program. It is. Moving more aircraft per hour through major hubs is a legitimate operational goal. The research behind the new categories is solid. The system is better calibrated than what it replaced. But for the pilot in command of a light general aviation aircraft sharing the terminal environment with wide bodies and narrow body jets, the operational message is this. The minimum separation you're given is calculated for standard conditions. The atmosphere you're flying in today may not be standard. The vortex you're following may be sitting exactly where your approach path ends. The caution the controller reads is the beginning of your decision process, not the end of it. Federal Aviation Administration Advisory Circular 90-23 covers wake turbulence avoidance in full. FAA Order 7110-65 Delta governs air traffic control separation standards, including RECAT applications. The NTSB accident report number AAR02-01 covers the JFK 2001 accident. All of it is public record and worth your time before the next time you fly into Atlanta or LAX behind something heavier than you. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Tower. Stay above the glide path. See you next time.